You're listening to Season 6 of MGIF, a video game podcast where you listen to me walking around mostly London, having fun, silly chats with people who are involved with or have an interest in video games in one way or another. If, by chance, this gets you thinking about video game culture and its wider place in society, that is not my fault. This week we have the incredible Mr. Alex Donaldson. Alex is a video game critic, he's the owner of RPG Site, he's the assistant editor at VG247, plus lots of freelance elsewhere. We walked around the mean streets of Solihull and took in some gorgeous, verdant sights in the blazing sunshine. A huge long walk was had. Then we popped on the train to Birmingham to have a brief visit to NQ64 before sitting outside and soaking up a few more rays. This is the first entirely roaming episode of the season, maybe ever? We talked for hours about all sorts of stuff and had a great day, so what you're going to hear is a sort of truncated version of our huge chat, travelling all around Solihull and Birmingham with topics aplenty. We spoke about Alex's upbringing, his unusually early start in games writing, including his first visit to E3 at the age of 18, the future of expos and the games industry, family life, Alex's obsession with projects, some of which involved tearing up his house and installing many, many arcade machines, choosing a direction for your websites and staying true to yourself, plus many, many other topics. Before, of course, closing out with a little bit of Street Fighter chat outside NQ64. Now, for two men obsessed with Street Fighter, I think we actually did really well in not talking about it for ages. There's just a little bit at the end, so don't worry if you're sick of me talking about fighting games. Alex is great. This is a wonderful chat. It was nice to get out of London for a change. That was good. So please enjoy with me. Season 6, Episode 13. Alex Donaldson. Right,
I've landed in
Solihull. I am in the car park of the train station. I'm waiting for Alex Donaldson. There's greenery as far as the eye can see out here in the car park of Solihull train station, by which I mean I'm looking across the road and there's some trees. Well, it looks quite nice actually. It's quite pleasant, quite pretty. I don't know anything about Solihull at all. But I'm sure we're going to get the tour so we can learn together. Just checking my messages and Alex is walking down the road as we speak. Hello there.
Hello.
How are you doing? You good?
I'm alright.
Yeah.
Welcome to Solihull.
Thank you. Beautiful. Just looking at the trees.
It's an alright little
greenery.
Town.
I was like, do you know what? This is quite pleasant.
We're the bit of the West Midlands that hasn't gone bankrupt.
Have they front loaded all the trees though, just outside the station?
No, Solihull is quite nice.
Nice. How long have you lived here?
Forever, really.
Forever.
I mean, well, in a manner of speaking, I guess. Yeah. So I was literally born in Solihull Hospital.
Right.
So literally 5 minutes walk in that direction.
Oh, really? Really? You've always lived here?
And yeah, well. So I grew up in a place called Hall Green, which is sort of, that's in Birmingham proper.
Right.
So that is 15 minutes down the road. And when I was coming out of infant school, going to junior school,
yeah,
my mum did what a lot of parents do, which is move house solely for school.
Yes, and yeah.
So I was very fortunate in the sense that Hall Green itself isn't terrible.
Right.
Mum moved us to a much posher area at great personal cost.
Right.
In order to get me into one of the Solihull schools, and then from then on, I've been in Solihull my whole life, apart from brief interludes.
Okay.
I spent some time in Los Angeles, inspired very much by video games, right?
Like, right.
Go there for E3 and go, actually, it's quite nice around here. which not many people say about LA, but I will always defend LA. The thing I always say is, it makes people laugh, as I always say. I feel like there's a kinship, weirdly, between Birmingham and LA. Which
oh, really?
Sounds crazy, because you think LA, you think Hollywood. But actually, if you're at LA, it's this weirdly... It's a weird city because it's not New York.
Right.
And it's not Washington.
Right.
In the same way that Birmingham isn't Manchester or London.
Right, okay.
Or, you know, Cardiff or wherever.
I see it.
And I also always felt a similarity in terms of Birmingham obviously has an enormous Asian population.
Right.
Indian, Muslim, whatever. And... in LA, their version of that obviously is the Hispanic population.
Right.
So a lot like, to be fair, London's a lot like this too, right? Every corner shop is run by some sort of ethnic minority or whatever.
Sure, every taxi. Yeah,
and Birmingham. And so I always felt a little bit weirdly, there was an energy of the two.
Yeah.
They're not remotely comparable in many ways, but when I was living there, I was like, there's an energy where I was like, this isn't terribly unlike home, really.
Whereas you, like, go to slide in there. Yeah.
And New York is London, right? In that comparison, you go to New York and it feels like London in the sense that...
I imagine the same attitude as well.
There's a lot to do in it. There's a lot to do there.
There's lots
of stuff. And everyone's, you know, all systems go all the time.
Yeah.
And everything's hideously expensive.
Yeah.
So it's... Yeah. But I do love this town. Like, my wife and I have... talked about if we'd go somewhere else, and
no,
I can't see it anytime soon. Like, we do have a soft spot for Somerset, but
would you go back abroad? Would you go back to America?
You know,
for a non games related reason, as it were, or is it not quite?
Well, I love a holiday, and Vegas is my Achilles heel.
Love that. It's very, divisive, isn't it, Vegas? I've never been, but go and go, wow, or you go and go,
fuck
this. I
like to play poker and stuff, so that for helps, me, there's a lot for me to do there.
Yeah.
But, we are green. But, in terms of living, I don't think I'd want to raise a child in America, and I have a child now. So yes. I think that would be the primary factor for me.
Yeah. Locked in for now, sort of thing, right?
Yeah, but, you know, this country is a disaster, so never say never.
Yeah.
The big change over the last couple of years of my life, really, is getting used to dadhood and...
Yeah, how's that going? So, what is it? So, 2 years old, the little
one? Two and a half.
Two and a half. How's that going?
Yeah, good. I mean, I think...
How do you feel now?
The best piece of advice I had was, of all people, we were having our garden done, and speak to the landscape gardener about it, all people... And he said, and this was, I don't know, we were probably 3 months out or something at that stage.
Right.
And he said, don't be disappointed or upset or feel weird if you don't feel a huge connection straight away.
Yeah.
There's actually a news story about this recently, because some celebrity, I can't think who it was.
Oh, yeah.
Some Hollywood person. Said, I mean,
oh, yeah, who was it?
I can't think, but he said it in quite a crass way, where he said... for the first year of the baby's life, would I have jumped in front of a bullet for my child? No. Now I would. That's a bit of a weird way of putting it, but I definitely resonate with the... I loved her from the second she came out. It was an amazing feeling. I've never felt anything like that in my life.
Yes.
Sitting in that room. But then you get them home and they're not interested in you.
No.
You don't have food.
No.
You know...
Yeah.
If they're sufficiently sleepy, they'll have a cuddle or whatever. And that's it. And so the first 9 months is pretty boring, really.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, now I've got a child that is of an age that's exciting and it's interested
stuff,
in me,
yeah.
and wants to do stuff with me or for me, or you know, and just even just this morning I was in my office piddling away, sending a couple of emails, even on a Saturday morning. And, and she just potters in, "Dad, can I have some paper, please?" And I don't know, your heart swells whenever.
Of course it does.
I'm loving it, and
I think like you almost become, because as you say, there's not really a lot that happens in the first stage. You're just like, okay, what do we do now? Just sort of get on with it. It's maintenance, mainly maintenance based.
Yeah.
I think parents sort of become apologists for their kids, right? So anything that happens, anything that's tiny that they do, or oh, look like they sort of did a smile there, or look like they looked angry at me.
Boring.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to get in trouble with my with my wife a bit because it'd be like, look, she's done X or Y on my hair.
Or did you have that thing where it's like, she's smiling and you go, no, it's the passing wind.
Yeah, she's about to be sick. Yeah.
They don't know what smiling is at the moment.
Know, first steps is to come speak, on. But I got in trouble a little bit for the first. For that first 6-9 months where it was said to me multiple times of like, you're more interested in the dog than the baby. It's like, yeah, that's because I'm getting stuff back off him. Yeah, he wants to do stuff, he wants to go for a walk, he wants to play.
Do you prefer something eventful going on? Like, how do you manage work between you, like, when, you know, and sort of duties with the kid and the dogs now?
Well, I'm very fortunate because, obviously, I split my time, right, so I work for Gamer Network on VG 24/7.
Yeah.
But that is just a fraction of my time, really.
Okay.
I'm a part-time employee there. My official title is like assistant editor, but really, these days, and we have tried to get the job title changed, but that's a bureaucratic nightmare.
Right.
But it's more like editor at large.
Okay.
I sort of just roam around and pick up on interesting topics and do interesting things, and then hand that over to Tom and Dom, who are really running the,
I do love those like distinctions in editor types and styles and flavours that I've learnt over the years. Like, at large is my favourite because it's like
being a man of leisure, basically.
Yeah. Always thing is a slightly threatening air to it, like, at large. Like, he's around, fucking look out. He's at large.
You get the advantage of. I will say, by the way, it's weird, like. Like, oh, this is quite significant to me because it's like,
yes, we're going through the centre now, right?
We're on the high street, and the game that I used to work at used to be down there.
Oh, really?
Mate, rest in peace. And like,
yeah,
all the nightclubs that we they're not really here anymore because they're starting to clamp down a bit.
Oh, really?
A little bit. But
what have they been changing to? There's a nice team room there, that looks nice.
Yeah, it's all really nice. That building's been there for hundreds of years. Sort of a little piece of Stratford upon Avon creeping down in that sense. Obviously, that's where. People always ask where's Solihull, and the easy answer is, oh, it's by Birmingham, but actually the answer that I think gets across a better sense of where the place is to say, oh, it's sort of between Birmingham and Stratford upon Avon.
Okay.
Which sort of that poshes it up a little bit, admittedly. It's
sure.
A bit of a snobby thing to say, but it's sort of the vibe here is sort of halfway between being in Birmingham and halfway between being in Stratford.
I can sort of feel
without
that.
Hundreds of tourists.
I can sort of feel that. You've got Carluccio's, for example.
Yep. That used to be a horrendous nightclub.
Oh, so did it?
Many a time stumbling out of those doors.
What was it called, that?
That was a Rosie's, which is a...
Rosie's.
Which was I'm pretty sure Rosie's is a chain.
A chain?
It was a chain at that point.
Nice.
But the only thing we've got now is a Pop World.
Right.
And I don't think that'll be here very much longer because
so
someone got stabbed in there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not good.
And the council's been on the warpath. Is it rightly so? Anyway,
well, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I really sidetracked. But
No. This podcast sidetracks. We're going through the environment. That's good. It's fine. Yeah. Wherever we go is where we go.
So to come back to the to the work life balance thing. So VG 24/7 is part of my time, and then obviously there's RPG Site and its parent company. And the advantage there is that's mine. I work when I want.
Yeah.
I do what I want. I've got a wonderful team around me. There's my business partner Mike, so you know Mike and I, it's very freeform, and it's freeform for the guys who work for us as well, and so how it works really is I just sort of steal time where I can in both directions. So if work's crazy, like we had a very busy month in February, March, we had Dragon's Dogma and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and start of the year we had Yakuza and Persona, and my wife's very good, understands that, like, when shit like that's going down, she has to accept that I'm not going to be around to watch TV or in bed at a reasonable hour because stuff just needs to get done. And, and in those instances also, she sort of accepts that for the period when there's mad reviews and stuff, maybe I'm a little bit not as good as a dad either because I'm just really busy, but I'd rather be busy in providing.
It's balancing that, especially working freelance, which I've got exactly the same in terms of my setup. It's grabbing time where you can, right? In and out in little slots, and then you get bigger portions or whatever. And it can be hard to go, right, is that everything?
Yeah.
Is there something else I could do? Because you could always be doing something else, right? And that's one of those things where you sort of, there's less of a delineation between work and home life, right?
My office is just literally off the hallway, so from the kitchen or the living room, I'm 5 seconds from work at any given time. But I mean, and some people are more precious about that and like to have hard delineations. I grew up, you know, single parent household, and like I say, mom broke her back to move us up here and to get me into certain schools and stuff like that. And part and parcel of that was she would work long hours and I'm very close to my grandparents, and part of that is because they were very, very involved in my upbringing, more than any other grandparents typically are, because they were helping to fill in the gaps because mom still needed to go and have a career and that sort of stuff. And because I grew up in that environment, I've grown into an environment where I'm like, I don't fret if I'm busy and I don't see Evie that much for a week, because we'll make it up in when we have time to do stuff. And and that's already showing in, she's hitting that age now, like I said, where she wants to do things with me, specifically with me, and there's things she wants to do, but obviously she's at that age where everything's mom first, really. I sometimes do a game in the back of the car of her nursery, which is like this or that, so I give her two things. She says which one she prefers or wants or whatever. And if you do mommy or daddy, it's mommy every time. Sometimes I lose to the dogs. But I'm okay with that.
And I still beat the
grandparents, so that's a thumbs up.
Mid-table.
Yeah, because she does love the grandparents. But I've had an unconventional setup, you know, because for me, I work, like I said earlier, I worked at Game when I was at college and university, but I've always been this.
Yes.
You know, the website that became RPG site in many ways, didn't directly become it, but sort of led to it, was set up when I was 11.
When you were 11?
So, and Mike would have been 13 or 14, I guess. Right. A couple of years older than me.
Okay.
And, you know, I was just very fortunate, and most of it is absolutely right place at the right time. I wouldn't sell myself as a genius. But... We were in the right position, often by mistake, to just, by the time I left school and went to college, I was, you know, it was making a little bit of money, and that was when I had the realisation that, oh, this is something you can do for a living.
Yeah.
And...
That's interesting, because...
By the time I went to uni, it was real, it was a business.
That's interesting, because I can't think of anyone else I've had on or anyone else I've spoken to where, like, the usual narrative is, whether it's on the media side or on the dev side, right, is, I didn't even realise games could be, like, a job or anything until fell into it, you know, at whatever point, right? Your uni path, whatever else you did, was something totally different, and then you went, oh, you know... Even a lot of devs is like, well, I wanted to do games, but I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to work at a game. That sounds like too much fun. Do you know what I mean? I'll be doing security systems for some bank, you know, whatever. But I've never sort of heard it this way around, especially like so early. You're just like,
I just remember me and my mates Rob and Dan, who, you know, I'm still tight with now, and they were groomsmen at my wedding. And me and my mates Rob and Dan used to like make. You know, make our own games magazines and run them off old, you know, inkjet printers. And wouldn't have even been inkjet, because we're talking when we were like 9 or 10. And I was obsessed with the Sonic the Comic. And Rob keeps everything, so I know for a fact, terribly embarrassing, and may they never come out. But Rob's definitely, he's definitely got some of his own writing from that era. Right. I don't know if he's got any of mine. I hope not.
Amazing.
And so it was that weird thing of, I did want to make games, and and this shows me up for having gone to a bit of a posh school. State school, though. Like, I'm not a private posher. But, so at senior school, our senior school had a trial of a laptop class. So if you imagine, this was 2001. No, 2000, right. Maybe? 2000. So it's quite an early time to be doing that. And the idea was, if the parents were willing to stump up for the laptop, which was maybe 500 quid or something like that, kids, the kids in this one specific form all had laptops.
Right.
All just crappy Dells. They were never very good. And thinking about it and how much I think the parents paid for it, the parents probably paid more than the book price of those laptops for whatever reason.
Right.
But, so we were, there were seven forms in our school year, in year seven, and I was in the laptop class. So there was 32 or 33 kids that all had these Dell laptops.
Yeah.
And basically it meant that we used our laptops for almost every lesson instead of pen and paper.
Right.
It didn't last very long, because if you give a bunch of teenage boys in particular, but the girls too, laptops, by the time we got to year eight, I reckon only half the class had laptops because they were breaking, they were just getting destroyed, and the parents were going, well, I'm not paying again.
Yeah.
But I was the one where I was still carrying a laptop in my bag. In fact, I was probably there was probably only two of us,
really,
out of the initial two ones that were still using a laptop, not for every lesson, but I still carried a laptop at school.
Oh my God.
All the way up to year 11. And the reason that was the case is because, you know, I have to credit that laptop class. Like, that was probably the best 400 quid mum ever spent, or however much it was.
Yeah.
Because that was how I was doing. I was interested in internet stuff anyway, but that was how I sort of found fandoms and stuff like that. And that was how my interest in old school magazines like N64 magazine, I was a big fan of Sonic the Comic.
Yeah.
And they obviously had the Games Review pages in that. My mum actually was clearing out her garage, and she just bought to my house a huge stack of 200 odd issues of Sonic the Comic.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm thrilled at. And my daughter saw it and went, Sonic! Because she knows who Sonic is.
Of course, yeah.
And but yeah, so that laptop class sort of, and it also gave me the advantage of, well, one, I had a laptop.
Yeah.
Which was quite rare then. So I have very fond memories of coding the website at 1, 2, 3 in the morning. And I would put the laptop on the floor on the side of my bed and lean over in the glow with all the lights off and stuff, right, because I'd get in trouble. And if mum woke up, if I heard her stirring, I would slam the lid shut and slide the laptop under the bed and pretend to be asleep. But a great deal of UFF9, the Final Fantasy website that we had, was built in that era and in that style. So I was very, very lucky. So I just, again, you just sort of trip into it. And I was also very lucky to have a parent who, when I was doing it all, wasn't going, what are you wasting your bloody time on?
She was always
just like happy that I was happy and being creative and whatever.
I think there's a selection of parents from that era who realise that that's the way things were going, and it's like, right, well, if they're into it, that's, I ain't going to stop that. This is where everything's going to go in the future. So if they're computer literate, it's going to be,
and in fairness,
advantageous,
Our school was quite forward looking, so everyone was a little bit computer literate. We had a good computer class facility.
Yeah.
With not great, but half decent PCs for the time. But and a lot of the kids who were in that laptop class didn't get anything out of it because they just couldn't be bothered, and
we saw
some amazing things. I will never forget one of the kids deliberately smashing his laptop up in order to do an insurance claim. Someone had, like, dropped their laptop by mistake.
Right.
And got a brand new one off the included insurance that the school had applied
right,
for.
Right.
And so once everyone saw this person with their brand new shiny laptop, other kids started going, I'm going to fall down the stairs or whatever. And one kid, who I won't name, just like smashed his laptop off a pillar. Well, not his laptop alone, but it was in his backpack, and he took his backpack off.
Yeah.
And you imagine like a big supporting pillar.
Yeah.
And just literally smashed his bag off the pillar like three times, so his laptop was buggered, and then put an insurance claim. But it was all on CCTV, so he just got caught, and he never got paid out, never got his new laptop.
Yeah. That was like three times like accidental damage. Yeah, it doesn't look that accidental, mate. Even like if you didn't have CCTV, you just absolutely mangled the fuck out of it.
But yeah, but that's
great.
That's a funny thing. So yeah, I wanted to make games, and
yeah,
I
Did you mess around with any like programs at the time? How old are you? Because I'm 41, so I think you're
35.
35, so you've got a little bit of a.
So, what was it? Fusion Studio, Multimedia right. Fusion, is that what it was called?
Yes, that rings a bell.
So there was a, still is a website called Sonic Fan Games HQ.
Right.
Great website.
Sonic Fan Games HQ.
And that was Sonic Fan Games HQ was like quite. Quite good, like, you know, some of the guys who made Sonic Mania cut their teeth on that website.
Right, okay.
And Sonic Retro. And, so...
All right.
It's one of those weird things, it's like, I've actually never met them, even though I've covered their games and stuff like that, but I did used to roll in a lot of the same circles as Christian Whitehead and Taxman and all those people who ended up doing Headcanon and stuff for the Sonic ports.
Right.
Because when Sega realised they'd forgotten how to make a good Sonic game themselves, they went to the people who had obsessed over it since they were children and figured and
they'll know.
The code.
Yeah.
But I did make a couple of games back in the day and fond memories of like distributing my own game on burned CDs to other kids at school.
Nice.
And then it was being played in lessons and people were getting told off for it. So great stuff. But I was never a mathematician. I was never very good at maths. And that just meant, for me, at the time, my understanding was making games meant you needed to be good at math, you needed to be able to program. Obviously, now, the understanding of someone that age is probably a lot more nuanced because the media coverage is a lot better and we understand that dedicated artists exist.
Yeah,
and
So, you know, just games themselves have evolved so much on the technology side.
There's more people, right? Because I was looking at, especially rare games. I was looking at Diddy Kong Racing.
Yeah.
It's probably made by like 20 people.
Yeah, yeah.
And most of them probably were coders as well as other things.
Yes, yeah.
But I wasn't a coder, I wasn't a musician. Well, I was a musician, but not in that sense.
Right.
So I always just assumed that was out of reach. And that was when I was like, well, I really enjoy writing. And, you know, so I never really went down the path of fan fiction, but I always enjoyed games magazines. So that leads to reviewing games and just and for fun, and like I say, building my websites up, strategy guides, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then the thing that probably like creaked the door open to a more mainstream thing was legitimately, I went to uni, and I was eligible for some grants, single parent, mum's income level, and I was eligible for some grants, eligible for the student loan.
Mm.
But actually the website was doing okay, and I stayed at home for uni. I went to Coventry, so I just commuted down to Cov every day on the train.
Okay, yeah.
So I saved loads of money that way, and what I did with that money is I did lose that uni experience of being in halls and stuff like that, and I slightly lament that, but slightly don't, because luckily many of my friends did the same thing.
Okay.
And so our same group stayed together right the way from junior and senior school up until now.
Right. Do you think it gave you more focus as well if you're less sort of in amongst it, especially in the first year?
Well, I was never. I wasn't a good student. I would never lie about that.
Like, sure.
I'm of the personality type where I struggle to be ascribed to something. It's why Editor at Large works for me.
Yes.
It's why being my own boss works for me. Because when I'm my own boss and I'm doing things on my own, stuff just happens almost organically.
Right.
Whereas if I'm here and I'm being told you've got to do this by this date, it's always a struggle.
Yeah.
My attendance was never great. Part of that was just because of not being bothered. Part of that was because of working on the websites. Part of that was because of being pissed loads.
Yeah.
As you do.
Yeah, as you do.
But the one thing it did do is I didn't spend loads of money on all that stuff. And so my first year at uni, I took all that grant money and stuff and I went to E3.
Oh,
which
right.
Which was something that was too expensive, really, to do off the website money.
Yeah.
But it was within reach with the grant.
Right,
and
yeah.
And at E3, I met a lot of people.
Yeah.
Including, it has to be noted, Pat Garrett, who obviously, you know, bit of a long-time industry legend, and he founded VG247, and he worked on many magazines back in the day, and
Eurogame
back in the day, and all that sort of stuff. And Pat was one of those people who... Pat's no bullshit and very very straight down the line. But he's also always willing to give people a shot, and young people, he was always willing to give people a run out. And so we sort of talked in the back of the, I want to say it was probably the Xbox booth.
Right.
And I was just this excited guy, like, oh, you're VG 247. Oh, wow. This was probably not long after he'd founded VG 247.
Right.
And we sort of traded cards and we stayed in touch. And then I did bits of freelance for him over the years.
Okay.
For me, it was like my own websites were growing. But actually, it was like this, it's this imposter syndrome legitimacy thing where it's like, I want to work for a real website as opposed to my little two-bit operation.
Mm.
And two things came from that. One, it did indeed give me some legitimacy, and something we have even to this day is that I find that RPG Site and VG247 have a Gamer Network, and the bosses there have been kind enough to let me do those two things.
Mm.
To let me stay at VG247 while having my own thing.
Yes.
Which is, you know, it, to some degree, is a conflict of interest. But what I found is that they actually have a symbiotic relationship. RPG Site opens doors with certain publishers and stuff that VG247 can't open.
Right,
because
yeah.
Because they think it's too niche or whatever.
Right,
and
yeah.
VG247 sometimes, the fact that I've got the clout of a big website that's three times the size of RPG Site or four times the size of RPG Site behind me, opens and creaks a few doors open.
Mm.
Get a lot of PRs come to you and say, we want to, it happened quite recently, we want to offer you this UK exclusive.
Right.
What we'd really like is for you to do a little bit for both websites, because we think there's a placement. We'll give you this interview with this person who's a bit more general for VG247, and we'll give you this interview with this person who's going to give you the nitty gritty nerdy deep dive stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
For
is cool. RPG,
which yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. I got to E3. I met Pat and I learned a lot on the ground at E3 because it was just throw yourself in at the deep end.
How old would you have been going there at that point?
Well, first year of uni, right? So,
yeah, so 18, 19,
yeah.
Amazing. How did it feel just like setting off like that? Is that something that's ever bothered you? Like just setting off by yourself like that? You got your business cards with you, you're going to go E3 and you're going to like impose yourself upon the...
It was a bit scary. And yeah. I had appointments and stuff because I didn't know people. I remember like just shitting myself about visa and stuff like that.
Yeah.
First time I went, I did not travel on a visa. as many games people, you know, have done over the years.
Yeah.
I was there that E3 where they opened up a separate lane in LAX passport control and said, anyone who's here for the E3 convention, please come to this window. And everyone was like, this is great, we've got a fast track window. And then watched in horror as loads of media, some quite high profile and well known,
oh, no,
were turned around and put back on flights to England.
Shit.
I got a lot of freelance that year though, because loads of people got sent home. I remember watching who was sent home and going, well, I'll pitch them.
Making a note.
As I waved goodbye, because there was probably about 30 of us on this flight out. Very classic moment.
Oh my god!
Very UK games media. That.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think which way we go now, because we're going to loop us back to town. It's a question of if we loop round here and go back on ourselves. What I know is with those casual guys who do not pay attention to video games news, do not follow IGN on Twitter or anything like that.
Mm.
They always knew when E3 was.
Yes.
They don't necessarily know when Summer Games Fest is.
Yeah.
Or when the Game Awards is.
Yeah.
The only reason they know when Gamescom is because I'm usually posting pictures of myself drinking Kolsch.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, we don't have a Super Bowl or a WrestleMania, do we, for
basically
games,
and
not.
And that's what I think has been lost with E3. And obviously that's something that Jeff wants to replace and replicate with Summer Games Fest. And to that I just say, that's fine. I think in the broad sense,
yeah,
I personally don't think it's much of an improvement to take that out of the hands of the ESA, which is an industry body that publishers actually have some sway over, and put it into the hands of what is essentially one dude.
Yeah.
Seems like a bad idea to me, even if the dude's a good dude.
I think so.
And so that's where I miss E3. And I think the problem is the ESA has been spooked off now, and I don't think there will ever be anything happen that sort of brings that sort of industry-wide, industry-body thing back.
Mm.
And it makes me sad, because like I say, there aren't many things. I always know a game event is a big deal when the lads start talking about it.
Yeah. It's a good litmus test of, like, who's... Yeah.
I knew the Dragon's Dogma DLC story was bad because it made it to that chat, and I was like...
Yeah, so the one guy in our...
Now.
Like, you've got the same range. Not quite as broad a range in our sort of regular group, but as a fella who's, like, it doesn't pay as much attention, a couple of them, to games as the rest of us do, right? Mm-hmm. Which sounds great, to be honest, sometimes.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But, like, yeah, it was the same kind of... So what's with Dragon's Dogma 2? Is it all fucked up because of these microtransactions? Is it shit? And it's like, no, it's not. But that becomes the casual message, doesn't it? Because that's what catches on, even though it's just so grossly inaccurate and there's way more to it than that. And it was so weird.
I always do use that group as sort of, in my work, as sort of, I mean, I do two different jobs, right? So on RPG site, I'm not thinking about those people because we're catering to hardcore RPG nerds who know everything about role-playing games and everything about Final Fantasy, whatever. Yeah. But that group, I use them as a litmus test a lot for VG247 work about what do people actually know about who aren't just obsessively involved with games. And I think in the media, we on the whole, whether that's because people lack the people to bounce off who are outside games, or whether that's just because of blind spots or whatever, but I think sometimes we miss that.
Yes.
And it goes both ways. Like, how did I know that... we'll see if this pans out, but like, my feeling is that although they've made comments to the contrary saying we found a new audience, my feeling slash the vibe and the discussion I get from talking to people there is that Final Fantasy 16 didn't manage to break out with a new audience in the way that they'd hoped.
Okay.
And they built that game in a big way to try and capture people who play, say, God of War and stuff like that.
Right.
But I don't think they've sold anywhere near enough copies to have successfully done that mission. They did capture some people, but just not on the scale that they needed to or wanted to.
Right.
How did I know before launch that was going to be the case? Because none of those lads are talking about Final Fantasy 16.
Yes.
And they all play God of War and Elder Scrolls, and they've all talked about nothing but Fallout for the past week. Well, I say they have absolutely talked about loads of things Fallout, but Fallout has grabbed everyone, thanks to the TV show.
For sure. Yeah. Which has been a thing, right? And they've seen the number of concurrent players across Steam and all the Fallout games, never mind just like the more recent ones.
One of the lads literally going up this very morning, before I came out, messaged that chat saying, is anyone playing Fallout 76? This is a guy that I have not played a video game with in probably 7 or 8 years.
And that's the one.
And he was like, is anyone playing online? So it goes to... Again, that's how it's all anecdotal, but I use them as a broad.
Yes.
You know.
Okay.
So presently, they literally dug out the foundations on Monday and Tuesday, on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then they had all the concrete poured on Friday. And so loads of stuff that was out in the yard is in the house. The house is just a disaster. And we've got a 5-month-old puppy, so there's puppy pads everywhere and stuff like that.
Fucking hell, man.
And the driveway is like gents' cars on the road because there's only room for one car on the driveway because the other half of the driveway is a skip and a huge pass problem.
The chaos makes you feel bleh.
We always like a project. So yeah. But that's the thing. I feel when they broke ground and started work, I was like, this is really... I think it speaks a lot to my personality and I'm not like this would work. I'm like, this is really stressful, but this is great. Had my notepad out, and as soon as they dug the footings, because you get your plans, but your plans are only so much of the actual vision of what will actually come to pass.
Yeah.
Nothing is ever accurate. Welcome to the this plans.
Service. Okay.
So I'm out there, and the second the builders have left, I'm out there with tape measure, measuring how deep the footings are, how wide the footings are, working out, okay, so the walls are going to be 30 centimetres thick, and then you need about 12.5 mil for plasterboard, 10 mil for dab. 3 mil of actual plaster scheme on top. So this is how wide the room's going to be. This is how deep the room's going to be. And I'm going on a floor planning app on the internet and trying to work out how many machines could I get in. You know,
like an arcade paradise sort of situation.
Yeah. I like to complain, but I love the stress. It comes back to why I was talking about I love E3, because E3 was a horrible, stressful week. And I always used to make jokes about, oh, here comes E3. We post GIFs on Twitter of like, you know, someone drinking directly from a bottle of vodka as you think about planning it. But actually, I live for that shit.
Yeah.
And I think that's a personality type thing. Not everyone is like it.
Yeah.
But a great deal of, I've been really lucky, but a great deal of the success I've been lucky enough to have, the bit that isn't luck is probably down to me being slightly unhinged in that sense, and so it's tenacity and, and being a bit bonkers and loving the stress.
Which seems like you want to be involved in something at any one point. Something's got to be in transition or in the process of being made or built or adding to something, right?
Jen has said, you know, a bit of neighbours have said to us some stuff, you're always doing something.
Right.
But, there's been a project every year of our adult lives together since
right.
we bought the house, which is coming up on 6 years now
yeah.
since we bought the house. We were together obviously before that, but that was when you were, you know, living as single people.
Yeah.
I was actually, for the last year or so before we got the house, I was back at home because right. I'd moved away. Well, not moved away, but this is when I was spending a lot of my time in LA.
Right, okay.
For work, and just because I loved it out there. And my mom got diagnosed with breast cancer. And only child, there's only for the longest time, there's only ever been me and her.
Mm.
So, and there's the grandparents as well, but they're old, you know, they're not getting any younger.
No.
So I came back from America, obviously, I came back anyway.
Right.
Because I was going back and forth a lot. And when I came back, when I got back, I was then told that she'd been diagnosed, and I was really pissed off at the time because I was like, I could have fucking picked up the phone. Mm. But they didn't want me to.
No.
I was out there for like, at that time I was out there for 2 months, and I think she got diagnosed like 3 weeks in, and they didn't want to tell me and have me cut short this 2 months.
Yeah, or if you couldn't, like, you just have that in the back of your head the whole time when you're trying to get things done. So I sort of get the decision.
Yeah, I'm over it now, but at the time I was furious because I'm the control freak. and I hate to feel like I've been out of control or something.
Right.
And
yeah.
So I came back for that, and that was when it stuck for a long time. I was like, I won't be in Birmingham. Maybe I'll end up in LA, maybe I'll end up in London, maybe I'll end up in Bath or Brighton, all the games media hotspots, I suppose. And that was actually when I sort of re-established myself, put roots down here again, in my heart, you know.
Mm.
My roots were almost, in a sense, always here, because I never truly solidified working and living anywhere else.
Mm.
But that was always... My heart was already gone.
Yeah.
But when I came back for that, for the worst reason, that was when I sort of my roots went down. It wasn't a tremendous amount of time after all that. Mum had all the treatment and got the all clear, thankfully. And it wasn't a tremendous amount of time after that that we had a series of... My mum got the all clear, and then my nan got exactly the same thing. And so she went through it all, came out the other side fine, very, very lucky. Very, very privileged, and thank God for the NHS and all the rest. But by the time all that was over, it wasn't a tremendous amount of time after that that I met Jen, and then that was that, really.
So there's not been a quiet period for, like, I don't know, nearly a decade, best part of a decade.
No, there's always been something. And, you know, being young and trying to establish a business and trying to establish a reputation and meeting Pat Garrett, he's a very unconventional person. So I was very lucky to meet him, because I think I probably wouldn't have, I don't know, RPG site might have still grown in the way it's grown and stuff like that.
But, yeah.
You know, I learned so much also through doing freelancer stuff, and he and I were of a similar mental makeup. So I don't think I could have come through the paths that other people have come through.
Welcome
yes.
to the service for
a bit scatterbrained and a bit unconventional.
But
it's worked to my advantage.
Yeah.
But I've been lucky.
Well, I think it works now. I think it fits the way, especially on the media side of things, people work and people have to work, because you can't stick to one thing anymore anyway. That's just the way it goes, right? So it's just the way, like, you know, like, The amount of stuff that I'm doing aside from photography, which I like doing anyway, and I like that suits me.
Yeah.
But now it's becoming more of a necessity.
Yeah.
Where people are going, well, I also do this and also do that, and I can also contribute to this and do this and that way, right? Got to, like, some work for Ninja Theory recently, and it was like, do you do video as well? And I'm like, well, I can do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you do this bit and that bit. So, and then just other stuff that I won't go into now that I'm talking to people about, and not just in games, other places, where it's because I do everything.
And it's not easy to make that work either, right?
No.
Like, you know, obviously, you know, Jim, who I work with, Tricker,
great
friend, also, like, him and Burns and Dave did their thing and were successful with it, but I know for Jim, it was
hard work and it's stressful doing that. And I think Jim decided he was happier to be on the wage somewhere and have that safety net and just have the structure. And that was why he came back into games media traditionally. And at least I think that was his reasoning, because they were doing some great stuff and were having great success with it, and did a lot of work for a lot of big companies. But it's hard, isn't it? It's hard to justify. It's hard to make it work, and that's where I've been. And we have RPG stuff, but the other thing that doesn't get talked about much, that I don't talk about much, to be fair, is we also have all our, unlike a lot of small independent game websites, we have our own tech stack. We have, we call it Mist Engine, which is, all our stuff is named after Final Fantasy IX, because that was how we started out. So in Final Fantasy IX, all the airships and stuff are powered by mist. There's this mist that's throughout the game world that you can't see a few feet in front of you, and it's a big story element, the mist. The mystery of why it's there and stuff. But all the airships that are powered by the mist, they suck the mist in and use it like petrol.
Yeah.
And so we called our back-end mist engine.
So
that's built to power RPG side, but something that we don't talk about is we also license that out, not to game businesses, although we could and we probably should, but it's like there's a go-kart track somewhere over there and their website uses Mist Engine.
Oh, right.
And so that's been a big element of the business for us, and that's given us a safety net to be bold and be confident with RPG side, because we're not reliant on, well, if Google changes the update next month, we're out of money.
Yes.
And I'm also extremely conservative, which helps. Like, a lot of places chase really aggressive growth.
Yeah.
Games media, and take any shortcut they can get.
Right.
And something we've seen a lot in the last month is Google changing its mind about what is acceptable to them, and websites having been being cut off at the knees as a result, all their traffic disappearing, and it's a disaster. And I think there's a strong chance this year we'll lose some websites.
Right.
In response to that.
Sorry, but
definitely we'll lose some people from the industry, because jobs are going to go. It's inevitable.
We've been
quite lucky in that, rather than chasing 50% growth, I've been like, I'll take 5% every year.
Right.
Right. And
right.
That'll see us good, and I don't need to, I think the flip side of that is, had I done it the other way around and taken every shortcut and stuff, maybe I would have picked you up in a Ferrari today. But at what cost?
Yeah.
To the people you exploit and produce awful shitty content.
Yes.
To your own soul, in terms of how soul crushing that work is to do.
Yeah, man.
And to the security, the job security, in terms of you do that stuff and then Google goes, you know what? Nope. And then your business is gone overnight.
Yeah.
So those combination of things have given us a bit of security. I'm content. That's the one thing I can say, is that I think a lot of games websites, there's exploitative staff practices, especially on independent small sites.
Yeah.
There can be exploitative staff practices, or just sort of
lowest
common denominator stuff that doesn't respect the audience
very
much and stuff like that. And we've steered clear of all of that. And so one of the things that I can say is my conscience is clear, which I feel quite good about.
Yeah. It's hugely important. Hugely important.
And there's good websites that have been caught up in, there's good people who run good websites that have been caught up in bad stuff through no fault of their own as well, right? The first one that comes to mind for me is there's obviously a games website that the founder is a piece of shit.
Yeah. We know.
And a lot of good people have come out of that website.
That
is forever there.
Yes.
And I've had fights with people about that. In fact, I think most of the high end people on that website have got me blocked on Twitter. That particular person is a particular frustration to me, because there aren't many of us mixed race people in games media.
Yes.
We're not a very visible category.
Yes.
In fact, I mean, as far as black mixed,
it may very well, I don't know, there's probably some people I'm forgetting about, but in the UK, I'm like, it's me, Imogen and him.
Yeah.
So it's a shame that fucking one hell. Third of it is that.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know,
is a shame. Well, yeah, it really is a shame, man.
So I find that it's a particularly prickly thing for me, because I'm just like, this is our representative in a way. I mean, thankfully, he's sort of stopped trading in the game stuff at all. There was a time when he was sort of doing both.
You're right.
But I think
he thinks it's hurting his image
now. Oh well, he's deleted his games. Specific,
yeah, the grift shift,
Twitter again,
as we call it, which happens a lot.
But you know, it's hard when you're from a marginalised background,
yeah,
of a sort. It's difficult. You want there to be other people visible that are like you, and that makes it even more shitty when the other person that's visible like you is a huge piece of shit.
Yeah, and it shows exactly. It shows why representation has to go farther than just like, we've done a bit of representation and that'll do and that's it. You know, it needs to be much more evenly spread, right? Yeah. So you don't have to worry about one person going completely rogue. Do you know what I mean? And that's fucked now.
There's obviously all this nonsense about diversity and inclusion and all this Gamergate 2.0 nonsense going on. I'm one of those people, I like to think I'm a bit more pragmatic about it, in the sense that it's not a very common opinion on the left, of which I am.
Yeah.
But I do think there is a stage at which sometimes that stuff can become too much.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, the correct people are not necessarily getting jobs.
Right, okay.
Because, you know, I've seen many a company, inside and outside games, make really poor decisions because they've made a decision based on the fact that they want to try and fill a certain element.
No, I hear you.
And they make a bad decision. Now, the flip side of that is we need representation and we need the right people in the right places. So the problem is there's a middle ground.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing is that idea of like there's lots and lots of white men who are very shit in the roles, but they've given opportunities to be shit for a prolonged period of time before they're good at stuff, right?
And that's the problem, because that is just as bad as someone who is also a bit shit being given a job because of their race, their age, their sexual identity, whatever.
It becomes ammunition as well, is another problem.
Those two things are just, because, you know, I have it.
Excuse me.
I sort of have it both ways in that sense, in the sense that, yes, I've just said that where I said sometimes I think we do get it a bit wrong on the left, and we basically hand the right ammunition sometimes. But the flip side is I am also a person who jokingly tweets all the time about, there was like one of those AI things. It was like, here's an AI yearbook. And someone had generated a yearbook photo, and it was all the most generic white men you could possibly imagine in your life.
Right.
And then a couple of white women.
Yeah.
And I quote tweeted it going like, games website staff page.
Yeah.
Because that's what it did genuinely look like.
Yeah, yeah.
There are games websites I can think of that I won't name where it bore a striking resemblance to their actual staff page in terms of the numbers and the demographics.
Yeah. And when you think about it, if the AI is drawing from existing data, then that's kind of why that is like that, I imagine.
And I know people of colour who somehow are fucking incredible and somehow struggle to get work.
Yeah.
And that baffles me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know, how do you solve that problem? I don't know.
No,
like, I mean, I've always been lucky on RPG site in that actually at the minute we're more male than I would like.
Right.
But historically we've been very lucky on the gender makeup, at least.
Yes.
In the sense that RPGs as a genre, I think generally speaking, have more women as fans. So I think we probably had more people who were interested in, like, I think if you were to do the demographic breakdown, I'm sure Square has all this in the bank, but I imagine the Final Fantasy fan base is a significantly higher percentage of women than most games.
Yes, yes.
Or like Dragon Age, or what is going on here?
We've got a country night. Nice.
That wasn't here the last time I was here.
Oh, really?
That looks pretty cool.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
Weird. Well, there you go. Birmingham, a bunch of people in cowboy hats and boots.
Birmingham's thriving country
this
scene.
This is all the tram I was talking about earlier that's going in, you say. That's the thing, so we'll see. But even if it's quite, even if it's for some reason loud in there, it's nice out here.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's very short.
NQ6 where it is, isn't it? Yes. It really is. Especially on the Saturday. Little plaza outside NQ64.
Yeah,
they were. So I was going to have my 40th in Loudon.
Sounds loud in here.
We're going to get a little taste of NQ64, and you might get a fade out.
Woo! He's loud.
Yeah, we're in it. That's all right though. Let's get on the machines anyway, and there's a little fade out, and we'll see you shortly. Obviously, I get why they. They set it up like they do, but like I just want the sounds of the machines themselves. I want to hear the the mix of the machines.
Time crisis,
really, baby.
Music in that night is incredible, but you're not getting that in there.
No, you're not. And like, this is why like I still love Third Strike, right?
And music.
Because the music, and also that music is sort of designed to stand out in an arcade, like, you know, that sort of really deep lo-fi booming, like, it's really low and
also
like,
the cabs were built for it.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like, and you can sort of see that reflected in the music, right? And I think that's fucking cool, right?
I love a good attract mode, you know. That, it really bumps me out that Street Fighter 6 doesn't have like an opening movie.
No, it doesn't.
The Ultra Street Fighter 4 like attract mode is burned into my mind because I've got a Street Fighter 4 cab in the office.
Yeah.
And so if I ever turn that on for a video or whatever, it would always be running in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, 6 doesn't have it. It doesn't actually have an opening movie, which is such a shame. Especially because that trailer they put out for 6 was so good. They could have just put that trailer in.
Yeah,
But they just
and they had like they put so much effort into the character announcement trailers that aren't, you know, that's not animation that's in the game, you know, Jury turning up on a motorbike and shit like that. Do you know what I mean? You
could it's in World Tour.
Is it? Oh, it's because I never play World Tour. That's why.
World Tour's good. World Tour's good. It's worth. I make a point of.
I know. Apparently, it's got the best theme in it as well. The World Tour. It's got the best music in it. Like the menu screen or something. It's got a really good.
All of the soundtrack of that game is really good, and it's sort of Third Strike-y, right?
Yes, it's like a nod to it, isn't it?
I'm sort of baffled that there is not a there's no music DLC yet. They're selling all these costumes and shit, and I'm just
that's true,
they're doing the weird unlock thing, right? So you unlock stuff through the battle passes, but it's only for the MP3 player, so you can only play it while you're walking around in World Tour, while you're walking around in Battle Hub. I'm just like, right, give me a DLC. I don't want to encourage bad practice, but give me a DLC that is £10 and it gives me the Street Fighter 4 soundtrack.
Yeah,
and then what I want is the thing that they have in Smash Brothers, where you can select the likelihood that certain songs show up.
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I would then give me that DLC and give me all the themes from all the Street Fighter games. Give me an SF1, 2, 3, Alpha, you know, 4 pack. I will buy them all, and then I will adjust each character of how much I want to hear. I want to hear the Jury version. I want to hear the 4 version of Jury's theme. I, you know, never want to hear the 5 version of Jury's theme.
No.
But sometimes the 6 version. And you know, I want the 2 version of Ryu's theme to be the most common, and that's what I want. And I'm astonished they haven't done it,
because people buy that, and also it's enjoyable stuff rather than like a rubber ring when it's summer for your avatar in the fucking Battle Hub, which is, I never go in there now, but I don't know, man.
I still use Battle Hub, but I just like seeing the chat, because I like seeing the salt
is funny, man. Just going in and seeing the salt.
sometimes I just idle and just watch it. I'm just like, this is great. I didn't know that was here.
Like, Campbell's board game cafe.
That must be relatively new.
Yeah, see, now that looks, going in there looks like a bit better speed in terms of like sitting and getting, having a drink and like.
It's quite cool,
like. You can just bloody hear each other, can't you? You know what I mean? No, but that old arcade game, the old arcades experiences, you know, it is gone. Like the seaside thing and.
But you've got to pair it with pubs, but you've got to pair it with pubs in the right way. And this is what.
Yeah.
Was it Platform that's just gone out of business?
Oh, yeah.
And I tweeted about it, and someone said Platform did nothing wrong. And I was like, yeah, but they did nothing wrong. But what they did do is they catered to like an esports audience and a hardcore gamer audience.
Yeah.
So you didn't have. There were lots of people in there who are not gamers, you can tell.
Yeah.
You know, people playing Time Crisis or whatever who don't play video games.
Yeah.
And you need to attract that audience. But I think there's a way to do it without being as garish and loud
as
in there.
Absolutely. There's a good middle space in there to
and
bring
I think
it all together.
Whoever actually has the bollocks to go for it on that and put some money behind it stands to do really well.
Like, I like these arcade club places, but it's...
But that's too arcade.
But also it's just that vibe of a warehouse.
Yeah.
Right, and I want something in between. I want a sort of not a full recreation, but something that recreates a spirit of being social within
that's
it.
That's more
like a seaside
what
arcade.
What you want
right?
is, well, I think, what you want is barcade. That's more clubcade.
Yes,
as weird as that sounds. Now the word barcade is copyrighted by a single company in America.
Is it?
Oh yeah, I've learned this the hard way. Because if you refer to if you were to write something about NQ64 and refer to it as a barcade in your copy online, their lawyers would be in touch. They are extremely litigious. It has happened.
Okay.
It has happened to me. They I mean, politely, but they sort of say, the word barcade belongs to us. Please remove it or link it to us.
Oh, shit. Right, okay. Yeah,
but
right.
That's sort of, and I think bar, that but that is the clubby vibe, and they turn the music up way too loud, arguably, and...
Like the closest I've had to getting that back is purely in a fighting game sense, when Street Fighter 4 was out, and I used to go to Goodge Street arcades, and they had that. So we'd all come, like, as a forum, and said, right, we're going down to 7
or
whatever.
By Piccadilly in Chinatown,
and that was great.
To get into it, and they had a Street Fighter 4 machine,
and that was great because everyone gathers in and like the Ryan Robbins, Winner Stays On, all that sort of thing, little crowds.
What a difference it would make if you had a Vuelix in there and an area where you could have decent fighting game matches, and you had a Street Fighter 6 cup.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, is Type Arcade out yet? I don't know, but it's close to me now.
That's what I want. That's all I want. I'd love to go in. Like, just go and play a bit of Six just in the arcade. Get a few people down there, or whenever anyone's going down, get a little scene. Just
Subside
a little
over there, it's got a Street Fighter 4 cab.
Is it?
Yeah.
Ooh.
But it's...
what are we doing here?
It's like a Namco... It's like a Namco Tekken cab.
Is it?
And the last time I went on it, the sticks were fucked. It's a rock bar. And
usually, anytime
I go in there, people are vomiting on pool tables.
Right.
And doing coke in the toilets. It's that sort of place.
It's like, I'm trying to do my Hugo clap loops here, mate.
Yeah,
can you
it's
not
really a great place for that. I just remember playing on it and losing really badly to my mate, who then gave it loads. And I was wasted. We were both wasted. And being like, don't understand why I lost. And the next time I was in that pub, like 2 weeks later, the stick was broken. I was like, I bet the stick was broken when I played him, and I just didn't even know because I was just hammered. So I'm trying to do hooligan combo with Cammy, and it's not coming out, and I'm like, why? And it's because the like bottom right left hand corner of the stick is completely broken.
This is the problem. It's not fun anymore fighting games. It's not fun. You're not there to have fun. You're there to learn and you're there to win. Right, it's gone beyond
miserable.
That. Oh, let's have a laugh. No,
it's been miserable. This is the problem with this job, though. I don't have enough time to get really good at fighting games. I make a point of going up to versus fighting every year.
Oh yeah,
here.
Yeah. It's belting.
And you know, I wasn't allowed to enter this year anyway because they had restrictions on if you had review code of 6 because you had it early. Not that I would have got anywhere. but I played in casuals a fair bit.
Yeah.
And had mixed results. But I love the atmosphere of those events.
Yeah. Can't beat it. Like, online for fighters is, it only goes so far. You've got to be offline, in person. It's honestly, it's 10 fucking 100 times better.
I had a great conversation with
Harada about this at Gamescom, where I went into did an interview with those guys, Harada and Michael Murray, and we just spent 30 minutes talking about being sad about arcades dying. Obviously, that was the first Tekken game that didn't launch in arcades first.
Yeah.
So that was a big leap for them. And so it started out with us talking about that in a work sense, but then it ended up, the conversation was just dominated by that topic. I think there's a place for arcades, and I think businesses like NQ64 have their place within that. I just think there's a chance to make something that is a bit more gamer first. I've talked.
No, I love it.
We haven't talked about work much, but like it's.
Yeah, we got round. We got through
it.
You can't tell us anything's coming up, right? For you.
What's that?
You can't tell us about anything that's coming up.
Coming up
in the next month.
Well, I'm going to Summer Games Fest, obviously. That's in a little while. I'm waiting to see who buys Gamer Network. That's a big thing for me. You know, it'd be interesting. That's interesting for me, because that's interesting for me on a like academic level. As a business owner, acquisitions are good for everyone. Well, no, let's wind that back.
Yeah, I was gonna
acquisitions aren't good for everyone. But if you own a business, the one thing acquisitions do is, if there's acquisitions going on, it raises the value of other businesses. So if you're a business owner, it sometimes means you can unlock equity and things like that. So acquisitions are interesting to me as a small business owner in the same space. Also, obviously, I care deeply about my team on VG247, and I want them to be happy and excited about the future, so I'm really interested to see where Game Network ends up. It's a great business. So that's going on. That's one of the major things that's ongoing in my life. I'm working on a project with a games personality.
Right.
Who sort of took a step away, who's a big name, who took a step away from the public eye for various reasons. And they're sort of thinking about how they're going to come back into the fold. And I think their profile is such that I think when they do come back into the fold, it will be like of interest to people. Like when they moved away, it triggered news stories on places like IGN and places like that. Yeah, I'm working on a thing with them that's really exciting. Why do I continue to do VG247? Part of it is because on RPG site, the lion's share of my time is on the boring business stuff.
Right.
So it's nice to be able to write about games.
Yeah.
I write on RPG site maybe 2 or 3 times a year.
Right. Right.
So I've been doing that, but I'm really genuinely really excited about that. If it all comes together, because all these things can fall apart, and it is very an indie, independent thing that could fall apart and not come to fruition. But I hope and I think it might work. So that's the main thing for me. And obviously, you know, VG247 is great. It's going from strength to strength right now. I think the team there... Fuck it, I'll say it. I think the team there is, like, pound for pound, like, the best team operating in the UK games media right now. It's a small team, but the weight class in which they punch in, for only being 7 people, depends on if you count me and Tom Ory. I'm only there a little bit of the week, and Tom Ory isn't really technically there, but between 7 and 10 people, let's say. And it depends if you count Jim, because he technically isn't on the VG Channel 17. That's that weird thing. He technically works for the video team, which is central in game. But the point is, I think the VG Channel 17 is really good. I think the content's amazing. That's not to begrudge or besmirch anyone else, but I think they're doing really, really cool, really exciting stuff. So I highly recommend people read VGTrendle7.com, and for that matter, read RPGsite.net. It's a good website, I think. It's all right.
I hear it's very good. Yes,
it's pretty hardcore, but Adam and James and Brian and the team there are just stone cold murderers in terms of the content and stuff, which just makes my life a lot easier. But yeah, that's it. I mean, there's, as always in this job, there's loads of stuff you can't talk about.
Yeah, man.
There's loads of stuff that's under NDA.
Yeah.
And we're entering at the time that we record this, maybe it'll all be different by the time it goes out, because you never really know in games, but it's all quite quiet.
A little bit.
Everything's out.
For now.
There's a guy dressed as Luffy.
Coming out of
NQ64. All his mates are dressed normally.
Oh, yeah. He's literally the only one dressed as in cosplay.
That doesn't always happen in Birmingham.
I wish it did. We used to do a game that was called Chase the Chicken. So you would buy chicken outfits. If you're really brave, you can just buy one chicken outfit. If you're not so brave, which we weren't, you buy two.
Right.
And you draw straws, and whoever gets the shortest straw or straws are the chickens.
Right.
And then everyone puts money into a kitty. So everyone puts like 40, 50 quid each into the kitty. And so we started off at a friend's house, and the chickens walked to the nearest train station, and they had a half an hour head start. Basically, the way it works is the chickens have everyone's money. So the chickens go into town and they've got like 600-700 quid cash. Which is a risk in itself.
Yeah.
But so the chicken, and they're in the chicken outfits.
Right.
And they have to go into a pub and they have to stay in that pub.
Right.
And they are allowed to spend the group's money however they like. They can buy bottles of Moët, bottles of champagne, they can buy rounds for the whole pub, they can do whatever they want. They can spend the money. We ask the... There's a line, don't take the piss too much, but they go out with their 600-700 quid, whatever, depending on how many players there are. And everyone else then gets on the train like half an hour, 45 minutes later, and you split into teams. We did teams of two. And every pub, you have to chase the chicken.
Right.
And you've got a map with a border on it, so then you know the chickens are going to be in a certain area.
Right, okay.
And every time you go into a pub to check if the chickens are there, you have to buy a drink and drink that drink before you're allowed to leave.
Right.
Alcoholic drink. And if you find the chickens, you then get to drink out of the kitty with the chickens. So if you're the first team, you're great because the rest of your day is reimbursed. If you're the last team, you are screwed because everyone's drunk all your and obviously the more teams find the chickens, the quicker the kitty's going to disappear.
Nice.
I don't know why. Well, seeing the guy in the Luffy costume made me think of us playing Chase the Chicken in this very city centre.
Luffy themed.
We could do Chase the Luffy, to be fair, although the chicken costume is definitely more humiliating. We didn't even do that for a stag or anything. We just did it just because we're too old for that now. Every now and then, someone in the chat goes, "We should do Chase the Chicken again." And everyone goes, "No, we're all in our mid-30s, boys. Come on."
Start, man.
Getting old.
So right. Don't panic. We see Alex in a chicken costume in the middle of Berlin.
I would like. When
you know what's happening.
When we did it, I didn't even draw straws. I was like, I will not be the chicken. I was like, I ain't doing it. I don't want to get stabbed by some guy in a biker pub. Because that's the thing, you've also got to pick a pub that other people won't go to be the chicken. So you pick a pub inevitably, probably in a bit of a rough area. Yeah. That was where they went.
Yeah.
Two white boys with beards. Fine. Me going in there dressed as a chicken, I'm like, someone's probably going to have me. So I was like, I won't be the chicken. I'm happy to just chase. Thank you, boys. I'll be in my normal clothes. To be fair, if I was doing it now, I might hide here. It's a bit good. But then again, that'd be too obvious for me.
Yeah, they come straight.
The
arcade
bar, yeah.
Anyway, for a chicken. Thanks,
full of
mate.
Stories.
That's beautiful. I love it. Doing that when I get home, chasing chickens.